my sentient noodles, and welcome to Scuba, where we dive deep into history and current events. I'm Mariner Mack, and this is the Things in Caves episode. And now it's time to strap on your air masks, check your flashlight batteries, and 3, 2. The year is 1940, and your name is Marcel Ravidal. You live in Montaillac in the southwest of France. You are 18, and when you're out of school, you're a garage mechanic with three of your close friends. You're out with your dog, Robot, when you come across a fox den made by an uprooted tree. Growing up, you heard urban legends about a secret passage leading to a local manor, and you'd done some half-hearted exploring as a kid. But this? Robot notices the hole, and you lean closer. There's a shaft there, and you think you might have found the legendary tunnel. But you're not ready. Dinner's on soon, so you return home and prepare. You go again to the hole next Thursday, a gorgeous day in mid-September, with your friends Jacques, George, and Simon from the mechanics shop. Robot happily runs ahead as you approach and start to dig. Soon, you've made a hole large enough to fit through, but just barely. You slip through first and land on a cone of loose debris, sliding all the way to the bottom. Your friends join you, sending showers of dirt down the back of your shirt. As you stand and brush yourself off, someone lights a lamp, and your gaze falls on the wall across from you. It's covered in paintings of animals, 90 feet of cows, horses, and deer, and a fantastically detailed scene stretching floor to ceiling. You, Marcel, have found the axial gallery of what will come to be known as the Lascaux Caves, a 17,000-year-old record of humans and their art. You and your friends explore every inch of the caves, finding chamber after chamber of ancient artwork. And then you carefully climb back out, seal it up, and start to keep guard. You protect your fantastic discovery for nearly a week before talking to a teacher at your school known for his prehistoric art expertise. Eventually, he takes you to some archaeologists who study the cave for years, taking photos, making copies of the art, and even finding bone and stone figures abandoned in sheltered corners. You keep the cave a secret for 8 years, and then you open it to the public in 1948. You and Jacques become its stewards, leading visitors through it year-round. The cave is closed 15 years later because it was ill-equipped for 1,200 people passing through every day. The paintings began to fade, damaged by heat, humidity, and fungal growth. The archaeologists work with the artists to make copies of the cave, reproductions that can be explored while protecting the original as best as you can. And you, Marcel, love the cave until you die at the age of 73. While the Lascaux Caves are the most famous, the most common way for such caverns of prehistoric art to be found is by accident, often by children who have no qualms about sticking their heads in holes. Cave art is absolutely beautiful. It's found across Afro-Eurasia with significant sites everywhere from France to Russia to Indonesia. We know of about 400 sites right now, decorated by humans between 40 and 14,000 years ago, during the Ice Age. Now, these paintings aren't hyper-realistic records in full color. Early humans used shades of red and black, typically pigment made from iron oxide or, you know, rust, charcoal, and manganese. They typically depict animals, but images of humans are pretty common, as well as handprints, made by dipping one's palms into the pigment or by blowing it through a reed to make a negative image. My very favorite piece of cave art, though, is the children's handprints. In multiple sites, there are tiny little handprints way too high up on the cave walls to be done on their own. Thousands of years ago, a toddler got their first art lesson lifted high in their mother's arms or balanced on their father's shoulders. Like now, even then, living in a cave and fighting for sustenance, we taught our children to make art. Alongside of the paintings, we found sculptures done in clay or stone, as well as engravings made with knives, or, if the rocks are soft enough, even fingers. We don't know exactly why these early humans made art. It could have been related to shamanism, attempting to send a soul into the underworld, or it could have been for the same reasons we make art today. To say something, to remember something, and to tell the world we exist. Moving on to the next thing found in caves, we're crossing into the southern hemisphere. Now you are called Tain Tinarel, and you were born in 1827 to Maori royalty. You are a chieftain now and an explorer. You wage war against the other native tribes with the warriors of your Kahia tribe. When you successfully subdue your neighbors, the Nagihau, you send out hunters to find food. When they return, they come with stories of dens of wild dogs who attack them and force them to drop the birds they speared and run. You take charge, of course, and you trap the dogs so that your warriors can eat them. Soon afterwards, you move your warriors to live near the entrance of the cave, which is used as a sacred burial ground. Eventually, you explore the cave system and recruit an English surveyor called Fred Mace to help you map them fully. You build a small raft with him, of flax stems, and light your way with candles as you drift down the river. You reach a grotto quickly, dotted with enchanting lights across the ceiling and wall and reflecting across the water. They are glowworms, unique to the island of New Zealand. You are able to pull yourself across the water and continue your exploration, lit by thousands of glowworms instead of your meager candles. You find another chamber full of multicolored stalagmites and stalactites, and another covered in cave flowers, a special type of mushroom. Like the young Frenchman over 100 years your junior, you are taken with the caves and return again and again, eventually opening them to tourists for a small fee in 1889. However, the government seizes control in 1906 and deprives your tribe and family of the income and historical significance of your Waitomo caves. You keep working in them until your death, as do your descendants. And in 1989, both the land and the cave are returned to your family. Glowworms, divers, glowworms. I know glowing bugs aren't the most groundbreaking thing in the world, but I grew up in the desert. There aren't fireflies out there. I had never seen one until the summer before my freshman year, and I am madly in love with them. They're like baby stars you can cup in your hands or that perch on your shoulders. You cannot convince me that they are not absolute magic. Anyhow, these glowworms are native to New Zealand and only New Zealand. They're usually found in gold mines or caves that receive little to no natural light. And if they weren't cool enough to begin with, they're also silkworms. I think it is mean that the coolest worm of all time only lives in one place. The worm luminescence comes from a compound called luciferin, which is not of the devil. It just produces a gorgeous blue-green luminescence. Luciferin and its partner compound luciferase are found in dozens of aquatic creatures, like worms, anglerfish, carnivorous sponges, which simultaneously sound deeply terrifying and like the worst horror movie concept ever, shrimp, clams, snails, jellyfish, and squid. It also crops up in everyone's favorite deeply unknowable organism, fungi, which is about the only bioluminescence found outside of water, and mince mushrooms as completely unknowable and epically cool. Bioluminescence as an adaptation helps in hunting for anglerfish, mating for fireflies, camouflage for firefly squid, defense for shrimp, and even communication in bacterial colonies. And again, it just looks really freaking cool. Now, to take a more sober turn, we come to our final thing found in caves, humans. This time, you're a child again. It's 2018, and you're a 16-year-old boy in Thailand. Your name is Birafat Somphangchai, and your friends call you Knight. You finish practice with your football team, the Wild Boars, on your birthday. Instead of heading home, the team bikes to a nearby cave you've explored in the past to celebrate. It was June 25th, and the cave closed in July. Still, you and the Wild Boars ditched your bikes and bags, taking only flashlights with you inside the cave. All is well until the rain begins to fall, and you are one of the 13 people trapped inside the Tham Luang cave. A flash flood traps you and your teammates, and you are forced to head deeper as the muddy, fast-moving water rises. You dig into a shelf that's just high enough to keep you dry, and as you huddle close and try to stay calm to conserve oxygen, your birthday cake sits untouched at home. You're not making it back tonight. Or any night for the next 2 weeks. Your team does not have any food, but the cave's walls have enough moisture to sustain you. Outside the caves, your family is panicking. People have gone missing in Tham Luang before, and they quickly start to gather help. The Navy SEALs, national police, and local volunteers all gather together and begin to investigate the cave, looking for signs that the Wild Boars are still alive. They find your things and some footprints, but now all they know is that you are somewhere inside the 10-kilometer cave system, one of the largest and longest in the country. The divers are inexperienced in cave diving, and the waters are still rising. Chamber after chamber floods, and the tide creeps ever closer. Your coach used to be a monk, and he teaches the Wild Boars meditation strategies, desperately trying to preserve air. The limestone is porous, but flow is still limited. Rescue teams attempt to pump water out of the cave, and then start drilling into the mountains, even sending heat-seeking drones in to try and locate you. One of your team members didn't go to the cave that day, and tells the authorities that a cove inside you visited before, called Pattaya Beach. And now the rescuers have direction. Search efforts redouble as friends and family members hold vigils outside the mouth of Tham Luang. Teachers join the search effort, money and food are donated, and the entire country of Thailand unites to support you. On the third day you are inside the cave, the international rescuers start to arrive. Your birthday outing has now brought the world together, Knight. American Air Force rescuers, cavers from the UK, Belgium, Australia, Scandinavia, volunteers and recruits from across the world have come to save you. On the sixth day, it is another of your teammates' birthdays. Your rescuers have fought their way into the cave through the floodwaters and set up base in a large cavern deep inside Tham Luang. On day 8, two British divers reach Pattaya Beach, and you hear them in the water. All 13 of you edge out of your refuge, and now you have been found. The divers spend time with you, then leave their lights and promise to return soon with food. They have video of you, Knight, and all of the wild boars, and the world celebrates. A medic and several professional divers join you in the cave, keeping you safe and secure while they figure out extraction. You are starving, but are given only liquid food and mineral water as another teammate, Dom, celebrates his birthday in the worst triple birthday party in recorded history. Despite the breakthroughs, there are only 3 days until a massive rainstorm floods the cave further. Spirits are high, if anxious, until Saman Gunan, a Thai Navy SEAL, loses consciousness while bringing you an air tank. He dies, and a funeral is held quickly, even as oxygen levels inside Tham Luang drop. The conditions inside the cave are horrendous, keeping rescuers from bringing air and communication even as they work around the clock. You write your family a letter, telling them how much you love your mom, dad, and older sister. You draw hearts and smiley faces and talk about the food you want to eat when you're free. Your coach apologizes again and again, but receives only love from the parents of the wild boars. On the 12th day inside Tham Luang, Thai authorities announce that you are being removed. Now. It is the 7th of July, and the caves have historically been entirely flooded by the 10th. The operation to free the wild boars is on. Once the rescuers reach you, you're each given a face mask to aid your breathing and are sedated to keep you calm. Most of your team is made of weak swimmers, and you're attached to experienced divers to navigate you to freedom. Once you reach the base of operations in the cavern, you're secured on a stretcher, and men carry or raft you across a pool of water. You are winched up a slope with a pulley, or passed along a human chain, or even slid along pipes pumping water. You are almost entirely unconscious, and some of your rescuers panic before realizing that you are alive and breathing. It takes 3 batches for all 13 of you to be freed, and the water levels have begun to rise as your coach, the last to be rescued, emerges. You are rushed to a hospital, and you are safe. Later, once you are released, you shave your head and spend a few days in a monastery, a Buddhist tradition, to show your gratitude for surviving. You, Knight, are free. We humans in general should not be found in caves. It is rather frequently a bad plan. The Tham Luang Cave Rescue is one of the most famous of its kind, a grueling 12-day experience that brought the world together. There were 2 fatalities, the Navy SEAL and another rescuer who tragically received blood poisoning during the extraction process, but all of the boys survived. With the exception of one, Dom, the third boy to celebrate his birthday in the cave, who passed away just last year due to a head injury while playing soccer, the wild boars are still alive, in Thailand or in England, living their lives. What makes Tham Luang even more miraculous, though, is that just as the last rescuers were freed from the cave, the pump failed and the cave nearly collapsed in on itself. Thankfully, it's been sealed off and no one will be repeating the experience. Thank you all for listening. Now, let's return to the surface.